Welcome to episode 43 of the Life as a Visual Storyteller podcast. My name is Roger Overall. I am a visual storyteller. I am a photographer, video maker, cartoonist. What else do I do? That'll do. That's fine. That's enough. And I'm based in Cork in Ireland. Today, I'm going to talk about a third business model for creatives. In a previous episode, I spoke about two business models. One, the client-orientated business model, which, to put it briefly, is a business model where you do one-off projects for people. That's the client business model. And they might come back to you, but they might not. It's a discrete project that you do for a client. You produce a video, you do a photography assignment, you create an illustration. The customer business model is a more repetitive one in terms of people coming back to you again and again and again. And typically where the customer business model is all about, say, maybe smaller purchases, and the client business model is about much larger purchases. The money involved is a bit bigger because they're one-off projects. Whereas customers might come back to you. So for instance, if you're a photographer, customers might come back to you for a print, or if you do a book, every time you do a book, they will buy that book. So the third business model I wanted to talk about is that of patronage. And let me define patronage for you as I see it. So patronage is when somebody gives you money to create something. And this is kind of my definition. So if it differs from yours, you know, that's fine. But just so you know where I'm coming from, I'll give you my definition. And they're not necessarily involved in the creative process. They're not putting any criteria on their money, any caveats, any hooks, if you like. There are no sort of riders that come with the money. They are giving you the money to create something, and it's up to you to create what you want. It comes with a level of freedom. Now, I suppose the patronage model would have existed in the time of the great painters, particularly because I'm half Dutch. I'm just thinking in the context of the golden age of Dutch painting, where Rembrandt, for instance, would have had a patron give him money to make a painting. However, that would have come with certain restrictions, particularly if the painting was a portrait. I suppose in a way, then you're into the realms of a client-based commission, aren't you? I'm the client. I want you to create this thing for me. And often the caveat that came with that was, well, you have to make me look good. And there'd be some kind of critiquing of the work. That's what I'm not talking. That's not what I'm talking about here. I think patronage is a model where you have fans, you have people who love what you do, who love your work, regardless of what you do. And they don't really care what you're going to do in the future in terms of what it is you might be producing. They know it's going to be good because you've built up a track record with them. So they're going to give you money. And if you're a cartoonist, for instance, then you're going to provide them with cartoons. And they know it's going to be good because they've, as I say, they've come to like your work, they've come to love your work enough to say, well, look, here's some money to keep you going. And because of the way the modern world works, with phenomenal access to everybody around the world afforded by the internet, it does mean that we can tap into relatively small amounts of money, but a lot of them. And therefore, sites like Patreon can sustain artists and can sustain creatives. So Patreon is a website, you probably know it, but if you don't, patreon.com is a website where you can go as an artist, as a creative, and you can say, this is what I do, this is what I'm working on, these are things that I'm outputting, this is my work. And people can give you an amount of money every month. Now, it could be as little as, say, a dollar. It could be more than that. It could be way more than that. So they're giving you, for sake of argument, a dollar or $5 or $10 a month for you to keep creating what you're creating. You're not going to them like with a Kickstarter campaign. You're not going to them saying, I have a book idea, and to help this book become reality, I need people to fund it. Because then what you're doing is you're saying, here is a concrete thing that I'm going to produce, and you can pre-purchase it. You can help it happen by ordering a copy. If it's a book, for instance, I've got a book, a photography book in mind, or a book of my illustrations, or a children's book that I'd like to do, whatever it might be. A film. Films have been funded. Games have been funded on Kickstarter. But you have a specific outcome that you're offering people, and in return for their donation, in return for the money they give you, they are going to get something in return. That's how the Kickstarter model works, and that's how a lot of crowdfunding models work. Patreon is slightly different. Patreon is every month you commit as the supporter, if you like, to giving some money to the creative. And the creative is under no other obligation than to keep creating what they're creating, to create creating stuff, to keep putting stuff out into the world. Maybe giving the person who is supporting them a little bit of advance exposure to what's being created, but nothing else, really. It's just a platform. It's a model where people can say, I like what you're doing. I want to support you in what you're doing. And I want to make sure that you can keep doing what you're doing in the future. And to assist you in that, I'm going to give you a little bit of money every month. That's what I think true patronage is. I think that's it's almost like the gold standard of where we want to be as a creative, that people come along and say, don't care what you're doing, don't care what you produce in the future, just keep producing, and here's some money to help you. Because it gives you the ultimate creative freedom, doesn't it? You have the money coming in, and there's no obligation to produce a product, a specific thing. The money is there to help you create what you want to create. So it's a third business model. Not an easy one to achieve, I think, but certainly one for us to consider as creatives. Anyway, I hope you felt that was useful, found that useful. Or maybe you felt it was useful as well. Very tactile podcast today. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon. Excuse me, come in. You caught me drinking the tail end of a glass of coconut water, and I love it. I absolutely adore coconut water. Particularly, this is not a sponsored bit or anything, but I do enjoy the innocent coconut water. It is delicious. It is horrendously expensive at €4 at plus change at for a litre. But I do love it. And I love it in particular after I've done a run, and because it's full of electrolytes. And electrolytes are, as far as I understand, and I should really have checked this before I recorded this, but I'm not going to guess. I have an inclination that they're electrolytes, some sort of minerally things in your body, like salt, for instance. And what you see at marathons is in the aid stations, if people are not, you know, if they're sort of feeling a bit woozy or what have you, they might be given some salt or a pretzel or something salty to eat, just to replace the minerals that they've sweated that have left their body in sweat as they've run. apparently coconut water has lots of electrolytes, so I drink that especially after my long runs. And I'm now up to 20 kilometer runs when I do my long runs, which is only a couple of hundred meters away from being a half marathon. I'm really pleased with that, because at the beginning of this year, not even the beginning of this year, I think April is the first entry I have in my app that I use to track my runs, I was running under 2 kilometers, and now I'm up to 20 kilometer runs. And I want to maintain that level for a while. and have a really solid foundation to kick on at the beginning of next year for the ultra marathon that I want to run in August next year. It's not a very long ultra marathon, but the terrain is going to be very difficult. Anyway, more about that as the event approaches and I really up my training. What I'm finding, one thing I have to say about the long runs, because, okay, so I'm running 20 kilometers. That takes me, I'm not very fast, that takes me 2 hours plus. Yesterday was 2 hours and 12 minutes. And I find it massively therapeutic. Do you have that sense that you'd like just for a minute, just for a while, to step off this mad carousel of life and just have a little bit of thinking time and peace and quiet, so, and be at a point where it's just you and you can gather yourself and you can think your thoughts and you can just cut yourself off from the madness of life? Well, running long, actually, I say running long, these aren't necessary. 20 kilometers, yes, it's a long distance. It's nowhere near what, say, if you're training for a marathon, what you would consider a long run. Then you're into the realms of 30, 35 kilometers for a long run. So 20 kilometers sounds far. It is far. And I'm really pleased that I'm able to run that far. But it's not necessarily in the context of, say, marathon running, a long run. Anyway, 2 hours gives you a lot of time to be with yourself. And of course, what I find is I'm running and there are no phone calls, there's no email, there are no texts, and it's just me. Now, I listen to podcasts, and I listen to podcasts for the first half of the run. And then I always make sure that the second half is just me. And it's glorious. It is that stepping off the maddening, crazy carousel of life for me. And I'm protected. I'm in this bubble. That I'm in some kind of... You're thinking, don't say oasis. Don't say oasis. And of course, I'm going to say oasis of peace. That is such a hackneyed way of describing it. But look, you understand what I'm saying. And So a run, what happens is a run physically is exhausting for me, mentally as well. Yes, you get tired, but at the same time, I suppose psychologically, it's a real lift. I mean, there's a lift from the accomplishment of running 20 kilometers. Let's just leave that aside. And there's a lift, however far you run, there's always a lift from having done the exercise. But 2 kilometers, when I was running 2 kilometers, that was great. I'd run 2 kilometers and the mental sort of lift of having done exercise was definitely there. But what I'm finding now is there's also an element of sheer enjoyment in the running, because it's like I've hit the pause button on life, and it's like I've dialed that mad carousel of life from 11 all the way down to 0, and it's fabulous. It is just remarkable. And if there was any reason to recommend taking up some kind of endurance exercise such as running, that would be the one that I'd say to people, is you get an opportunity to stop the world and all this craziness and all the madness around us and all the hecticness, and I'm making up words now. You just get a chance to stop it and be at peace. It's wonderful. That's really the insight I have for you today. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to talk to you again soon. And I hope that you are healthy, and I hope that you're looking after yourself. Take care.